Hey, it's Norm McIver, and you're listening to Tim and Graham on the 610 Podcast.
Welcome, listeners, to the sweat-stained edition of the Six Sends podcast. It must be 40 degrees at CKCU Studios at Carleton University today, but nonetheless, I'm joined by Graham. Graham, how you doing?
I'm not too bad. We're going to cope. We're going to cope and get this done. And then we're going to get the hell out of here because it's damn hot in this studio.
I feel like we should be doing a Gatorade ad right now. Just splashing it all over the walls.
Black and white with the Gatorade splashing all over us.
Oh, I'd just be soaking these carpets. There's carpet staple all over the walls in here, and I swear it just picks up all this perspiration of everyone who ever walks in.
Gross.
Anyways,
how's that for imagery?
It could have been a lot worse. We could have got a lot more graphic. A lot to talk about today, believe it or not, since it is the third week into July, and we still have hockey to talk about. Of course, a lot of the rosters seem to be set right now. I'd say most of the league rosters are pretty much there. So now everyone's taken to releasing their annual list, talking about what teams did well in the offseason, what teams drafted well, these all-encompassing things so people can breathe easy for at least a couple more months until the season starts and these prognostications can be proven wrong or right, in which case we'll never forget about them.
There are two things that people love in the offseason. A, prognostications. B, they like to just attach letter grades to anything that they possibly can.
Oh, and you're forgetting a very important C, maybe even an A2, prospect porn.
Yes, that's true too, which is a fitting episode for the show.
Yeah, no kidding. It's funny, in the hockey world, these fanboys get so caught up in the development process and the selection process of hockey prospects. Like you see Corey Pronman, who we'll talk about in a bit, who writes for Hockey Prospectus, and you see messages sent to him on Twitter or whatever that say, Biggs and Kadri are these guys top six, and he'll respond saying like, yeah, I think so. And like, you can just see the kids on the other end of the computer screen being like,
fist pump,
yes, awesome, now what? Now I can pencil them in on NHL 12? Like, is that how this works? I don't know, but it just blows my mind sometimes.
That's not something that's exclusive to Leafs fans though, right? Like that phenomenon.
Oh no, it's not even exclusive.
Like James Reimer notwithstanding, like Every fan base does that. It's part of the allure of sports, right? It's like that hope for a greater future.
Yeah, like when I start reading character pieces on James Reimer saving lives and his helmet and his religious beliefs.
Prospect profiles by 8 different people who copy and paste from the same articles that they find elsewhere.
Give me a break. Yeah, this is how idiots out there come up with the assertion that Patrick Weirkosh is a giraffe on skates. Whoever said that should be dragged out to pasture and just left on a hill for a while, I think. See what the elements do to them. Your brain's mush. Get off the internet.
But looking back at some of the prognostications that we've seen over the past couple of weeks, one that's really stood out thus far has been Corey Pronman's assertion of how good the Ottawa system has become, right?
And how quickly.
Yeah, looking back, Ottawa's farm system was, the pipeline was barren for a number of years, right? Before Eric Karlsson, David Runblad, Jared Cowan came here, right? Like 3 years ago. There's no high-end players within the system.
And, of course, some of the guys that Muckler did draft were busy still playing in the NCAA and not contributing to either of the pro rosters that the Senators support. So, you're really not going to see that progress in a Sens uniform of any sort, right? Anyways.
Yeah, but getting back to Pronman's article, he ranked Ottawa as having the fourth best system in the National Hockey League, which is a huge testament to what they've done in the past couple of years. And looking at Ottawa, this year, notwithstanding, that was a meddling team, right? They were always kind of on the cusp of that playoff bubble, and they never really had those high-end selections. Obviously, they had Jared Cowan at 9, I believe.
Yep.
And Karlsson, I think they traded up for at 13, 14, 14 12 15. To 14 area. Yeah. Anyways, doesn't matter. But yeah, they've maximized value. They've had a couple second-round gems, Silverberg being one, Lehner being another, and Weirkosh is in the system as well. And yeah, you finally have those Muckler draft picks who are, fourth, fifth rounders, sixth rounders, from a number of years ago, we've actually kind of panned out. So the player development aspect has been there as well, and we're kind of reaping the benefits of that now. Although everything's kind of like coming together quickly, but I still believe that we're probably like a season or two away from making the ascent up the NHL ladder.
Yeah, I think after this past season's draft, where we just had such a, you know, a sheer bounty of quality players enter the Senators' ranks, as good as that is, and as nicely as it supplements the existing crop of top-end prospects, Brent Blad's another guy who I think we skipped over there, who we should probably count into the mix as well. As you look back to this past year's draft, I really think that next year we need a draft that's at least equal in the amount of talent that can be acquired, or maybe certainly in just, you know, quality of players. If we end up with a higher selection, and if we only come up with two high-end players in the draft, that will be fantastic, but that's really what this organization needs. We're not quite there yet. Pronman right now has, what, the Predators listed at 3, Islanders at 2, and
Red Wings at 1.
Of course.
The Midas Touch Red Wings, any European prospect they draft outside the first round is considered the steal of the NHL draft. Fantastic, as always.
Yeah, that's the nature of the Red Wings beast, right? That's why everyone was so ecstatic about Paul McLean. I mean,
the prodigal son of Mike Babcock.
Yeah. Babcock's made eye contact with him. He's got the Red Wings mind trick now. He can make it happen on the ice for us.
I don't think anybody's expecting miracles out of this Ottawa team next season. You look at the roster on paper and you're not like, oh, yeah, this is the team that's going to be able to like get into like the top 8-10 teams in the East.
Yeah, well,
like, the Eastern Conference looks pretty damn good this season.
Of course.
Or at least competitive.
Let's not fool ourselves. This is going to be a pretty lousy team this year. There's going to be some, you know, some moments of you know, acceptability.
Well, when your second
and it'll
line
be fun.
Yeah, but when your second line has two projects in Nikita Filatov and possibly Peter Regan, you're rolling the dice that you're going to get some intrinsic value back or production from those players, right?
Oh, we could
and
go.
And you need the health of Alfredson to be there as well.
And Mahalik's knees.
And you probably need, what, one or both of Jason Spezza and Craig Anderson to remain healthy for the full 82 games?
Let's talk about Foligno, if he can even manage to muster 15 goals this year. Is that going to happen?
It's one of those teams where it's like a lot of ifs and buts. Like, if this happens, we could be okay.
And can Condra and Greening repeat?
Greening, pencil man for 25.
Yeah, the modest offensive success they had last year. Can it carry over into a full 82 games? Probably not. Who knows? It's a very interesting team. But even if everything is a yes, if all of our what-ifs turn out to be the positive end, I really don't think that this team is even still capable of being a playoff team. Do you?
No, but at the same time, I think it's kind of exciting because you look at a lot of the players on Ottawa's roster and you're like, hey, I wonder what we could get for these players as a rebuilding organization.
But there's not as many of those players as there has been last year. I mean, a lot of like...
Well, that's the cash, right? Like, you look at last year's team, they had a lot of expendable veteran talent that, you know, you could parlay for young future assets. And looking at the cap situation this year, like, doesn't appear to be a situation that's favorable for Ottawa's management team to parlay like an expensive asset like a Philip Kubar or a Sergei Gonchar or a Milan Mikolic, for example.
You're almost better off waiting out the year and just releasing the roster spot to someone else.
Well, I just think it's probably a little bit unrealistic at this point to expect a lot back for some of those players.
And
unless they get off to like fantastic starts to the season, right?
Yeah, and my other thing is as well is how much can a guy like, say, Regan and Foligno maybe become trade bait at some point in the season? What's realistic return on two project players who have been in the NHL for a couple years who haven't really hit their stride? I think it would really take a GM who is really certain that they could turn them into the NHL players that they are both capable of becoming, and that would take a lot of gall to do that, but you're going to be buying low on either of them.
Well, I think as long as it's not a situation like Michael Grabner's where he gets waived by Florida, a bad, bad NHL team, right?
Yeah.
And then gets scooped by the Islanders, obviously, and then he becomes a Calder Trophy finalist.
Maybe should have won.
Nah, possibly.
He didn't make the All-Star game. He doesn't have the same, you know, youth rock star appeal that Jeff Skinner has, as was so shoved down our throats during the All-Star festivities. And I guess he has some sort of familiarity
and
to
now
Justin
everybody's
Bieber
looking for the new Jeff Skinner, like a late first round guy. Well, not late, but like top 10, who can actually step into the NHL next year and succeed. Maybe Mika can be that guy.
I personally think Matt Pumple fits the description of Jeff Skinner much better. Jeff Skinner was called the best natural goal scorer in his draft class. We've heard the same thing about Pumple as well.
He had some speed, though.
Yeah.
I don't know if Pumple has that foot speed.
I don't know. I'll have to go read some scouting reports and jump to conclusions
oh,
about
sure.
it. forget watching a game. That's what scouting reports are there for.
We've kind of hit on a number of wingers and their production, their young production. Bobby Butler recently just re-signed with the Senators to a 2-year, one-way contract. I think it earns him about $1,050,000 per season, I believe is the cap hit.
Sure.
Is that a guy who you expect a lot from this season?
About the same as last year. I mean, I
could
see
him. He's 24 years old, right? Like, he's...
Yeah, he's a 20-goal guy in the NHL. He's got a wicked shot. He had a great tail end of the year last year.
I'm surprised by his numbers. I was looking at his numbers, and he only scored one power play goal last season.
Oh, really? That's it?
Yeah. Everything else was even strength. I don't know if that's... That kind of even strength production is sustainable.
Yeah.
Because he did put up like quite a few points in the latter stages of the season. But it's definitely interesting if he can and then, you know, makes that leap on the power play.
Well, he obviously has the skill to be an NHL player and to be an NHL goal scorer. You don't need to look any further than that unbelievable move he put on Hal Gill last year and made a veteran defenseman look absolutely foolish. That may have been the Senators' goal of the year for myself. I can't think of anything that was better. Can
you? I think that was in TSN, or was it NHL.com's goals of the year? Oh. Where they do that fan voting.
That stuff doesn't matter.
No.
It doesn't matter. No one cares about it, really. It's just the same people voting over and over again. Family members.
Maybe a couple years from now, we'll see Bobby Butler in a Jubilee Jewelers commercial, and that'll be like that'll be the staple of the video. It'll be like that Jason Spezza Sheldon Surrey goal.
Or he'll roll out of someone's shower at some condo wearing a bathrobe, telling them why it's an awesome place to live. worst commercial ever.
I don't mind. It's nowhere near as appalling as that Maxime Talbot car commercial in Pittsburgh, right?
I haven't seen that.
Oh, yeah, you have. It was all over YouTube. I'm a star. You don't remember that?
No.
And he does like that gitchy, and he's bobbing his head. Oh, it's terrible.
Oh, man.
Terrible. I can't believe you haven't seen that yet.
No, I haven't seen it. I'm not sitting around trying to, YouTube.
Oh, man.
Penguin stars selling used cars in the heartland. Give me a break. Anyways, so where were we here? Talking about...
We're evaluating the system.
Yeah.
Expectations for the season.
So I think you got to play Butler alongside Spezza. Mahalik or Greening, interchangeable. I know this might ignite a little bit of discussion here. But I see Greening as being a guy who can really create some space using his size and, of course, his blazing speed that
right.
We all saw.
Adds a different dimension to the first line.
Yeah, okay. Exactly. And you can spread around a little bit more of the talent.
Doesn't inexplicably fall over his own feet while he's stick handling.
Yeah, and Mahalik could be just as well suited playing with a guy like Pete Regan on the second line.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yep.
If that's your conclusion. What do you do with Filipov then?
He's got to play somewhere.
Well, the whole purpose of bringing him in, right, is to give him that top six opportunity.
Maybe you do play him with Spezza.
Oh, in Butler? That would be a terribly bad defensive line.
Jason Spezza is one of the best defensive players in the NHL now, Graham.
I'm not worried about him, though. Like, he's actually reformed his game. Like, it's the other two I'd be concerned about.
Well, by all accounts, I don't think Nikita's all that poor defensively. I just think, like, I've read a few scouting reports. Obviously, it's not the be-all to end-all, but in his draft year, there were no glaring deficiencies.
I'm looking around for, like, the points of entry into the studio. I'm worried that, like, Ken Hitchcock will show up and wring your neck or something. I think we're safe.
Have you seen the size of that door frame?
Yeah, I think we're safe.
We're okay. Although I could see him doing a Kool-Aid man through the record wall. Oh, no. Yeah, there's so much talent on the left wing.
I can see Filipov playing in like a first power play unit capacity alongside like Spezza and Butler, perhaps.
Yep, I can see that for sure.
But like, I haven't watched enough Filipov footage over the past 3 years. Like, that's a kid who has like 44 games of NHL experience. It's tough to like
under Hitchcock.
Who's their head coach last season?
Oh, I don't know.
Was it Arneal? Scott Arneal? I don't even know.
I know nothing about that organization. Life's been good to me. It's so much easier that way when you just go through life just refusing to acknowledge the presence of the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Yeah. Okay. But, like, if we have to evaluate, like, at some point later on in the summer, I was hoping to get Aaron Portzline from the Columbus Dispatch on to talk to us about it. But, like, looking at what Columbus has done over the past couple of weeks where they brought in a lot of veteran...
Body checkers.
Well, like, veteran talent to, like complement some of their better offensive skill players. I mean, when I mean skill players, I'm exclusively referring to Rick Nash.
How about Derek Brassard?
Whatever.
Like, he played for the junior team.
Yeah, okay, whatever. But anyways, they've essentially parlayed a ton of youth. So I don't know if they have a lot of faith in their player development program for how they, like, graduate these players through their system. But like, obviously it's not an issue that's exclusive to Nikita Filatov. You can go back over the last 10 years, look at all their picks who have been like top 10 picks who have flamed out.
Has Rick Nash ever touched 50
no,
goals?
No, I don't think so. I think it was like 40 something.
Wow.
But he's just a goal scorer, though. I don't think that guy's put up more than 85, 90 points in a season.
In international competition, he never really shines as bright as I think.
Oh, he does against like bad teams. Like he scores like a ridiculous goal, and then
sure.
It usually happens early on in the tournament, and then, you know.
Yeah, but
that's why like kind of carries on. That's all you think about.
Like he's never quite the guy that his name value suggests he is on the international stage. Anyways, let's not talk about that
much
here.
It's very Danny Healy-ish. He's got like that kind of syndrome.
Yeah, so let's talk about the Senators' forward depth chart moving on here. Do we think, you know, we've had a little bit of time to digest Konopka and assess the center situation. You wrote an article about Pete Regan recently. Have we relegated ourselves to the idea that Mika will not be on this team this year, despite what happens in training camp? Are we there yet?
That's a tough question. Obviously, things can change, right? So it's tough to sit here right now and kind of like forecast what's going to happen in training camp because we don't know. Like, obviously, he signed his entry-level contract, which is the first hurdle that would allow him to play this season. But if we look back as early as February, I think, when Ottawa was in the bottom two, a number of Ottawa's senior management types said that whomever we draft in the lottery probably will play next season.
Now
obviously circumstances changed, and Ottawa drafted outside of that fifth pick. So for me personally, I just don't see the benefit in having Zibanejad play earlier than he has to.
I think can he play and should he play are two very, very different things in this situation. And when you look at the other guys who were drafted ahead of him, like, do you really think a guy like Ryan Strom is more NHL ready than Mika? I mean, Mika's got a much bigger body. His, you know, offensive skills. I mean, all we've seen are the development camp, the progress he made there. But
if I'm making my own personal assessment, it's not related to his actual talent or whether or not he's actually ready. It has to do with when is it better to have his entry level contract kick in and start? Is it this year? Or is it next year when he's a little bit further along in his development and he's experienced some other stuff, whether it's playing the Swedish Elite League, the under 20 juniors, and everything else, and that guy will be making more money more quickly as opposed to if you hold him back for one season. So I think it's of greater benefit if Ottawa holds him back one season and then he's better while the team's better and it makes that more economic sense down the road. I'm just looking ahead because what's the point? Like, the team's going to be bad next year. They have the veteran depth to acquiesce postponing his development by 1 year at the NHL level.
I agree with you as well. I think that if you don't look any further than the situation with Jared Cowan and David Rundblad to see what great benefit it can be to return a player to their junior club or to their Swedish Elite League club for another season so that they can go ahead and attempt to dominate in their league. And by all accounts, Mika had an absolutely fantastic end to his promotion in the Swedish Elite League and really started to catch fire. And it'd be really nice to see him sustain that across an entire season. Maybe get used to the rigors of playing against men for a slightly longer period of time. I know their season isn't quite as long as the NHL, but I think that would give him great exposure, allow him to play in the World Juniors, get some more international experience under his belt. It did wonders for Jared Cowan. It did wonders for David Rundblad.
Silverberg's doing it again.
Exactly. So why not? Why not? And it'll give him a chance to play with Sorensen as well in Djurgården.
Like, personally, I just don't think it makes a ton of sense. Like, okay, let's assume that Zibanejad is good enough to play this year.
Yeah.
You're going to have to move a roster player now. You're not going to get as much for that roster player now as you possibly could towards the end of the season if they play regular minutes and hopefully appreciate in value, right?
Unless there was some scenario that involved someone like, I don't know.
Like a Foligno or something.
No, I mean, like, talk about like a Jesse Winchester maybe playing 30 games to Zibanejad's 50 and then maybe picking up extra games when someone inevitably, Pete Regan gets hurt or whatever, right? You know, it's going to happen. So I could see a situation like that, but really that's kind of finicky and unnecessary.
But again, you have enough depth at Bingo now where you can
exactly.
You don't have to worry about those instances. And then at least you know what you have with a guy like a Stefan DeCosta who's in the last year of his deal as well. Like, what do you have there?
He needs to get a longer evaluation period.
I'm not saying he's NHL ready. I'm just saying, like, if he proves his worth in the AHL, gets in a good shape, puts up some decent numbers. Maybe that's a guy that you can play in like an 8-game spread as opposed to maybe bringing over Zibanejad a year earlier than you really need to.
Yeah, because you'll get more value from, like, what's the point of having DaCosta buried in the AHL all year? We went to all that trouble to sign the guy. He's at the right age right now.
Well, he'll get a look-see at some point, but...
I mean, he's got, what, 5 years on Mika?
Yeah.
So...
Well, I just think Ottawa is a bad enough team on paper where they should be affording everyone the opportunity to play, develop their value, and go. Unless it's a guy like Jesse Winchester, because I don't think you're going to recoup a ton of value there as well.
No.
Like, maybe you get a fourth-round pick for him. I think that'd probably be...
Oh, that might be generous.
You think so? Because he can win face-offs. He can hit. He's okay along the boards.
He's in like a moderate energy guy, I guess. He's
not every team has a guy like that, though, right?
He's not expensive, I guess. Like, you can fit him in somewhere, but really? On a playoff team?
Yeah.
I mean, I suppose you could put him in the press box and have him as injury reserve. But again, any further than that, I don't know. I don't know what you get for him. But I think we should get right now to our interview.
Sure.
It's about that time. I think this would slide in very nicely as we talk about the future and players who will be making appearance at training camp this year.
Yeah. When we get back, we'll be joined on the line by Shane Prince. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Welcome back, listeners. We are joined on the line by second-round pick, 61st overall in this year's 2011 entry draft, Shane Prince, also the star of the Ottawa 67s.
So, Shane, let's just get right into this. Kind of been a bit of a whirlwind season for you to this point. Why don't we just start right at the beginning, and why don't you take us through the Ottawa 67 season?
It was definitely a great season. I think it was a pretty successful season all the way through. And, I mean, the playoff run, I would have liked to go a bit further and do a bit better because we had a great team. But, unfortunately, that didn't work out for us. And I'm back next year. I'm going to try to get us as far as we can in the playoffs.
All right, Shane, I don't want to ask you too much about this, but how's your head doing after that hit against, was it Mississauga just before the playoffs started? Are you fully recovered from that?
Yeah. I didn't really have any symptoms at all, actually, after the hit. I think it looked a lot worse than it actually was. But, I took my concussion test the next morning. It passed all the categories, so I was fine. And, I think I came back and played pretty well when I returned.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And if you don't mind telling us, can you just kind of walk us through your experiences in the first round this year and what it was like kind of entering the series a little bit late? I guess you only played, what, 3 games in that series?
Yeah, it was definitely tough missing the first game. I think, honestly, if that game kind of decided the series, I think if we would have won that game, we would have kind of proven to them that they shouldn't be on the same ice as us. But they came out and won a game and kind of gave them some life and gave them some hope to win the series. So I would like to play that first game, but I did play games 2 through 4. I think games 2 and 3 in Sudbury, I did all right, and I think my game really started to come around on game 4 when we returned to Ottawa.
Now, Shane, you had a lot of success this year playing with Toffoli and Martindale. What made that line click?
I think it's just each one of us brings something different to the table, and we really complement each other well, and we clicked from the day we were put together, and I think, like I said, we complement each other really well, and it's a pleasure playing with those two.
Yeah, how would you describe their style of play? And are these typically the kind of line mates that you usually find success with, or is there a type that you like to play with?
I think I'm more of a playmaker, so I do like to play with more of the pure goal scorer type. But I think you can consider Toffoli definitely a goal scorer, and me and him complement each other really well. But, no matter who I play with, I try to make them better, and I think I do a great job at that.
So you got a chance to play in the CHL Prospects game this year as a fill-in for Landeskog, and you actually did incredible in that game, scoring the lone goal for Team Cherry. Did you get a chance to play with Matt Pumpel, talking about guys who can fire the puck from the wing?
Yeah, he's a great player. I think he was on my team in that game. And yeah, he's definitely a great player. It's pretty cool to be able to be drafted by the same team as him and be able to try to move up in the ranks with him. And you know, he's a great kid, and I enjoy being with him.
How was the experience itself at that prospects game? What was it like playing for Don Cherry?
It was awesome. Don Cherry is somebody you see on TV growing up a lot of times, and to be able to play for him in a game like that is incredible, and it's an experience I'll never forget.
Shane, take us back to draft day. You're sitting there for the first day. You obviously didn't get taken. What was it like, and how was your second day, and how was the experience in itself?
You know, I think I can consider the draft one of the most unpredictable things I've ever experienced. And, you know, I'm not upset at all, really. It's there was such a deep draft, and, you know, you could go anywhere. And I did go a little later than expected, but that's fine. You know, clearly I have some things to prove, and I'm up for the test.
All right, Shane. And being drafted by the Senators, of course, playing for the 67s, what did it mean for you and your family being able to potentially stay in the city where you played your junior hockey? How important was that to everyone?
It's definitely exciting. You know, me along with my family love the city of Ottawa and the support of hockey there and the fans and just everything about it. And to be able to stay in a city like that and possibly play an NHL career in that city is unbelievable. It's very exciting, and I can't wait for it.
We've heard a number of the other prospects. We had Mika Zibanejad on our podcast last week, and he kind of had a suspicion that Ottawa might select him at 6. Did you have any kind of inclinations or suspicions that Ottawa was going to be a team that would take you in the second round?
You know, I didn't really know. If I had to guess, I didn't think I was going to be available at that time. But like I said, it's such a deep draft, and I talked to pretty much every team. You don't really know who's going to take you, and it's so unpredictable. But I couldn't be any happier where I am now. I think it's a great position for me.
Yeah, I guess a few of us here, whenever we see really high-skilled 67s players in Ottawa, we always expect them to get drafted by the Sharks for some reason. But I guess you're only the second 67 player to be drafted by the Senators, which is unbelievable. How do you feel about that?
Like I said, I can't be happier. The city is so great, and you know, I'm so happy to be able to stay there and play hockey there, and to be able to be so close to the Senators. If I'm back with the 67 next year, is a great opportunity to, you know, stay around the rink a bit and stay in touch with the guys, and it's going to be great.
Did you have a chance to unwind at all after the draft? Because we know you had to get whisked away quickly to development camp the next week.
Yeah, that was pretty right away. After development camp, I came back for about a week, and I'm actually headed back to Ottawa now to train for a week with the Sens. So, I mean, I guess I really haven't had time to sit back and relax. It's been a busy summer all around, but it's been a great summer too.
Now, Randy Lee said that out of all the camps that he's partaken in, this development camp had the best talent that he's ever seen in a Senators camp. Could you speak a few words as to the quality and talent that you saw on the ice?
Yeah, I think we got a great young core coming up. I think there's a lot of great players here, and it's definitely going to be a battle for all the positions. And obviously, Ottawa is definitely a team that needs offense. I think they were one of the most scoring teams in the league last year. So, you know, it's great to be able to come in and have the opportunity to fill those spots, considering I'm an offensive guy.
So a lot of us Sens fans haven't exactly had the best looks at some of the other picks from the 2011 draft, some people who you're probably more familiar with than anyone. What can you tell us about playing against Stefan Nason and Matt Pumple?
I only played Nason twice, and I was actually out for one of those games. But I know he's a great player, and he's definitely a great offensive guy. And as for Pumple, I think he's definitely more of a pure goal scorer type guy. I could kind of compare him to Toffoli a bit as far as their style of play is. And, you know, Pumple's a great player. He's a pure sniper and has a great shot.
So we heard you had a little bit of an altercation in camp, a little scrum perhaps, with Brad Peltz. What happened in that situation? And drop a reference about him being the Snapple heir?
No, I didn't throw any jokes out, but I don't know. I think I just threw a clean hit, and he gave me a little chop in the back of the legs, and I don't know. I didn't really take that well. It was a clean hit, and I didn't see anything wrong with it, so I'm not out there to kind of get down by anybody. So if somebody wants to try to do that and punk me, it's not going
to
happen.
Good to hear. How is the off-ice rapport amongst you prospects at the camp?
Oh, I thought the off-ice was great. I think they do a great job there as far as showing the importance of off-ice stuff. And, I think a lot of the guys here were in shape, and it looks like a good core.
All right, Shane. So as of right now, your summer, I guess, has officially started. What are your off-season plans, and what are your goals heading into the upcoming season?
Well, as far as my plans are for the summer, I'm just going to be training. I'm pretty busy. I think I'm going to be in Ottawa for this week to train. I'll be back in Rochester for about a week or so, and then I head over to Lake Placid for the USA 40-man camp. And after that, I think I got about a week to come home and relax a bit, and then I head to 67th camp, and then Ben's rookie tournament. And as far as my goals go, I'm going to go into camp this year to make the team. If that happens, that's great. I'm going to do everything I can in my power to make the team. But if not, I know I'm still a young guy, and I'll be happy to be back with the 67th and make it a successful year there.
At the end of development camp, did the organization give you like an exit interview and tell you what you should be working on or what you could be working on for the summer?
We did have exit meetings. I think I'm pretty well prepared as far as, staying in the gym and staying in shape goes. And actually, I had a talk with Randy Lee, and, he came and met my trainer. So just to make sure I'm doing the right things off the ice and make sure I got a good guy to be in the gym with every day. And, I think they do a great job with it, and I think I'm pretty well set.
Well, it's good to hear that your organization is on the same page as your personal trainer. That's fantastic. Now, Shane, at the end of every interview, we typically do like a short little quick hits question and answer session where we'll throw out like a sentence to you, and then you just give us like the first thing that comes to mind. Do you mind sticking around for just a little bit?
Sure.
All right. Question number one. What's your favorite killer story?
favorite killer story. To be honest with you, I can't even pick one. He has a new story every day, that guy. And I can't even remember a specific one, but he's definitely got a lot of stories.
All right. What is the better OHL barn, the Odd or the Civic Center or the Rona Center?
They're definitely both great rinks, but I have to go with the Civic Center. It's a bit bigger, and the fans are a bit more rowdy for sure.
The fans get pretty rowdy at the Odd during Oktoberfest. I guess you may be a couple of years shy for that, but it does.
How would you describe? Yeah. Sorry, Shane. How would you describe Don Cherry's suit from the prospects game?
Wow!
He's got some wacky suits, but I like his style and I like his creativity. He's always got a cool suit on.
All right. If you were leading a tour of the city of Ottawa to a bunch of hockey players not from Ottawa, where would be the first place you take them?
I can't really remember the name of the street, but I think it's down by the market. I think I would take them, just walk around there. I think it's real nice to be able to walk around there. It's a great atmosphere, and I'd like to do it throughout the season. I do it a couple times just to walk around there.
Last question for you. Favorite restaurant in Ottawa?
Lone Star.
Oh, nice.
There you go.
Oh, you can eat fajitas. Definitely a good night. Definitely a good night. Well, Shane, thanks for coming on the podcast. We enjoyed having you. Hopefully you had a good time too. And best of luck to you for the rest of the summer. And we'll see what you can do in training camp.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
Hey, take care. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Good luck, Shane.
All right. Thanks.
Grandfather watches the grandfather clock, and the phone hasn't rang for so long.
All right, another fantastic interview.
Another prospect, another interview.
Yep, absolutely. And I referenced this in a blog this week. What a nice kid Shane was to try and get this arranged and make it happen. He did. Again, one of the first things out of our mouth. What a great guy.
Yeah.
Nice to take the time. Good
Straight
answers.
Straight to the point, yeah. Thought it went well. Moving on.
Absolutely. Let's talk about the hockey news. Last year, we got pretty mad at them for predicting the Senators wouldn't make the playoffs and would actually finish near the bottom of the division. We really ate our humble pie after going to lengths to rip that decision, and we even had Adam Proto on the podcast shortly thereafter to talk about it. And obviously, we were much more calm and cool and collected at that point. But again, the hockey news making waves with Sens fans, naming them, what, the third least improved team in the entire NHL out of five? What do you think? Tell us about this.
I'm not so upset with the hockey news, as you mentioned. Last year's prognostication came true, so you cut them a little bit of slack in that way. But, like, I don't know how anyone can reasonably look at Ottawa's team on paper and actually get upset with what they've written. Yeah, sure, there was maybe some, like, humor. It's always easy to poke fun at the bottom feeders. We poke fun at Buffalo all the time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's just, I get a good kick at it, like, the fans who actually get, like, vehemently upset with, like, these prognostications, and they get angry and start calling the paper a rag, and yeah, you know how it is.
Well, the Senators really are one of the least improved teams this season. We're not going to have any of the draft picks from this year's class on the team unless Mika somehow makes it, of course. And we signed Konopka and Alex Auld. I mean, these aren't exactly game breakers.
Or you'll move, right? Some of those veteran talents on the blue line. Like, I say the veteran talent pretty liberally there.
I mean, and
but like, assuming like Rundblad and Cowan come in, player development, but it might not make your team better immediately.
And it's still two rookies on defense,
yeah, exactly,
in the NHL. I mean, you have to insulate them somehow. They will get burned. They will cost us goals this year, right? I mean, it's going to happen. This team is not all that improved. And the Eastern Conference has gotten so strong, right? And it's really been shaken up. I really think that this is an honest and accurate assessment of where the Senators are at. Maybe right now, if this is the goal, our team isn't out to sign big name, big money free agents like Brad Richards and whomever else. But that's not the point. That's not the direction we're heading. And as long as fans can remember that and take it with a grain of salt, like I saw a lot of attacks towards the hockey news saying, oh, you completely discount, you know, where the Senators are at in the rebuilding phase. And
well, that's what they were contrasting, right?
Yeah.
They're contrasting it with Calgary, who's taking the complete opposite approach, where they kept signing veteran fodder like Brendan Morrison instead of just cutting bait and just saying, you know what, we kind of screwed the pooch on this one.
There's a team that really, really sucks at understanding the salary cap.
Oh, it's going to be so cathartic to watch them flame out, though. And because Ottawa's taking the exact opposite approach.
Alex Tanguay. Can you believe, man, that one?
The one I don't get is, like, they traded Robin Regier and a second-round pick. But those two young guys who will never probably play a significant role with that organization.
Oh, it's such a poorly run organization.
Oh, Jay Feaster is a beaut. He is a beaut.
How did he get promoted? How did he talk the Flames ownership into allowing him to be the full-time GM?
But like, Sutter did the same thing, right?
Just weaseled his way in.
Oh, no, but it was the same kind of player signings. There was nothing.
Oh, yeah. It was garbage. Like, when he brought Jokinen back for the second time,
yeah,
like, that would have been like us signing Emery this year.
Yeah.
Why would you even try that? Go down that road again. It makes no sense to me whatsoever.
But not our problem. That's the good news. It's going to be really, really cathartic to watch that go down in flames, because you can see it coming. It's just, it's such a bad veteran-laden team. And I was looking at the roster the other day on Cap Geek, and I think they're all, I think like 90% of the roster is protected by like no movement clauses.
That Battle of Alberta is going to be a sight for sore eyes this year.
Oh, it's going to be fantastic. It's going to be reminiscent of what like Ottawa-Toronto was about 10 years ago.
Yep.
Where Ottawa was just, they were kind of like graduating to that level. And Toronto was obviously.
But the Flames are way worse than Toronto ever was.
Yeah, that's true too.
At least the Maple Leafs had some amount of skill with Sundin and Roberts.
I feel bad for Iginla though.
And Nieuwendijk and those guys.
Yeah.
Oh, Iginla. He should just be trying to hop out of town as soon as possible. But who are the other teams mentioned there? The least improved teams. I think the Devils were one, weren't they?
I think the Islanders might have been on there perhaps.
Oh, of course. They're going to make every bottom feeder list.
Yeah. But it's just,
again, same situation as Ottawa.
It's like, if your team is the least improved in the offseason, fantastic. Fantastic. If you're in Ottawa's situation, there's probably nothing better that can be said. It goes back to like that Wyshynski review of Ottawa's team, right? Like, he gave their, what, free agency grade
D or something?
And then they signed Konopka and he bumped it up to a C. I don't know. I've never been so happy to get a D on a report card.
Yeah. Like, if we're not signing, I don't care about bringing in players this year. I didn't really see the need to bring in anyone except for a goalie, to be honest, especially after we signed Nikita.
Yeah, traded for him. The market was garbage.
Yeah.
Aside from possibly being able to make a deal or maybe move some veteran garbage for something that's younger. Maybe we roll the dice on a different kind of contract, but...
You know,
doesn't matter.
There's another thing to be said about the genius of Brian Murray. The subtle genius of Brian Murray is that he doesn't give out those ridiculous term contracts. Like, I remember hearing Tim Murray on the team after the
Jeff Carter trade.
Yeah, and then they asked Tim about the contract, and he said, "That's quite the contract, right?" And it's true. The Senators haven't given out any of those albatross.
It's like our podcast from a couple weeks ago, because we were discussing that with Nate Sager about Jeff Carter, and you said the term in that contract is the no movement clause.
Yeah.
And it's a good point. Like, that's an 11-year deal. That is a long time to be tied to one player who has some flags attached to him.
Well, I hope the all the fans in Quebec City are really into Jeff Carter. Do we think that organization can last 11 years in Columbus or whatever it is? How many years is he into it?
It's not Scott Housen's problem, though, right?
Yeah, of course not. He won't be there to see it through at all.
So... He's made moves to save his job.
Yep.
They'll do.
Of course. Look, Brian Murray did the same thing with Anderson.
You think so? That's kind of my opinion of it, too. But
all right. Interesting question for you here. Thomas Vokoun.
Yeah. 1.5 for 1 year.
Versus Craig Anderson. What are your thoughts on this? Is it interesting to know that a goalie with the skill set of Thomas Vokoun got so little money?
Yeah, but I think it's a perfect reflection of the market.
Well, how do you explain Varlamov then?
Desperation. He's young, though.
Yeah. He's also a flight risk.
Yeah, but he's young, and teams will roll the dice. And looking at some of the moves that Colorado's made of late.
Head shakers.
Yeah, the Eric Johnson deal, I think you might be able to argue.
Yeah. Oh, no, I would go to bat for that one for sure.
Yeah.
Definitely.
But LA for Anderson. Kind of reflects a tank job, an intentional tank job.
We haven't seen a ton of...
Maybe this will be karma for that, actually. This trade?
Could be.
Just a thought.
Corey Pronman actually wasn't too high on the Avalanche draft choices this year either.
Played him state.
Yep. Yep.
It was him and Siemens, I believe, that they took 11th.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah. So, who knows? Who knows? In a year, that might look fantastic. You never know.
I would like to see that organization... rise back to prominence again. The league's a little bit more interesting when Colorado's a good team.
Well, they're very young.
And plus it makes watching those late night West Coast games a little bit more tolerable on Saturday nights when you have... I hate seeing the Canucks just...
I don't mind watching the Kings because there is some young talent there.
Yeah. Yeah, the Kings are fine. Slightly less young talent this year. Now everyone can get off the Braden Schenn bandwagon. I'm so glad I won't have to hear about his name anymore.
Trade rumors. Oh, yeah, but now he's in Philadelphia, which is... the hometown of a certain anonymous rumor monger.
Do we think he's going to be an NHL producer?
Oh, he's going to be the best player that the hockey world has ever seen.
Schenn?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Bloodlines, man. Bloodlines. It's like the Stahl brothers, right? It's like Jordan Stahl's supposed to be like this phenom. Could you imagine if Pittsburgh actually drafted Taves ahead of Stahl? Good Lord.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be quite the dynasty right there, wouldn't it?
Oh, it'd be unreal. Just unreal. Malkin wouldn't be there any longer, but...
I love seeing all the Penguins players fly to Philly this year in the offseason, especially Jarger. That was just unbelievable. I really dislike the Pittsburgh fan base, and I dislike the bandwagon front-running fans that have appeared in Ottawa. I realize there's always been a population of Penguins fans in Ottawa because of the Lemieux
and
the Jarger
years. Every
team,
though. It's like when... I went to that Kings game. Yeah. Kings fans everywhere. Everywhere. And you're like, really? Maybe. I could understand possibly if, they grew up in the 80s and, Gretzky had just been dealt to the Kings. And, you front run when you're younger.
And you like Kelly Rudy and Tim Taylor a lot?
Oh, yeah. And then Rick Tocchet wasn't gambling at that point illegally. And
yeah, he was just getting suspended every three games. Brutal. But, yeah, so it was just great. For me personally, sit back and see some of these players that the Penguins have attached themselves to so closely because of their Stanley Cup win, singular, since the Crosby years, and see these guys go to Philadelphia. Unbelievable feeling. Really great. I could be happier for Philadelphia.
The East is kind of wide open now. Now that Philadelphia is kind of what would you call it, a retool? It's not really a blow-up. They just traded two guys who were possibly problematic for the organization.
It's a
blow-up. There's still like a ton of veteran leadership and talent there. So I suppose it all comes down to what Shen and Couturier could do this year. Could be interesting. That's an interesting team to watch.
Yeah, yeah. It's like when in SimCity back in the 90s there, when a tornado would roll through and knock down your casino. So instead, you put up an amusement park. You know, it's just gonna be different. It's probably gonna be as good, but it's just gonna be completely different. That was a terrible analogy. I don't know where that came from, but it's just gonna be really different. Like the Flyers are gonna have a completely different look this year. It's weird. I wonder how Bobby Clark okayed all these deals, because these guys don't seem like Bobby Clark players.
Has there ever been a team that's like retools as often as Philadelphia does, and it just never works out?
They've done it, what, this is at least the second major retooling in, what, 7 years?
Six, 8 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Not my cup of tea, but...
And we'll see how it goes. Of course, in Ottawa, we like to keep our players around for a bit longer and then decide.
Yeah, well, that's kind of like
a bit late in the game.
That was kind of like how I wanted to end this podcast, is to talk about the lessons learned from the past, like, three seasons, right? Like, you had a team that went to the Cup Finals in 07.
Yep.
You overvalue your hometown players. This is like getting back to our prospect point, right? Like, you can't overvalue these players. Once they get to a certain point, you have to hold the hardline stance, decide to keep them, trade them.
Chicago Blackhawks did that.
Yes, they did do that.
There's our counterpoint.
But that's like the new cap era phenomenon. Like, we haven't really seen how good they can be bouncing back, right? Like, what is the window of opportunity in the new NHL?
Yep.
It's tough to gauge because the salary cap also goes up every year as well. But
for now.
But getting back to Ottawa, it is going to be kind of interesting to see how Eugene Melnyk handles this new wave of rebuilding talent, getting back to the playoffs and getting to that level where guys are getting like their second and third contracts with the organization. So my question to you is this: do you think the organization will have learned their lessons from the past 3 years?
Absolutely. I think the fact that Brian Murray has another 3 years here to see this process through is definitely going to be what saves this rebuild and makes it manageable and worthwhile.
And based off where you think it's heading, Tim Murray will make that ascent to general manager at some point in time.
There is no doubt in my mind that Tim Murray will succeed Brian Murray and become the next general manager of the Senators. I don't see it happening any other way, like barring a total disaster in either Bingo or Ottawa over the next 3 years, which is going to be pretty hard to do. And correct me if I'm wrong, but Tim put together the Bingo team this year, right? Like,
yep.
He's a GM of Bingo.
Yep.
And he just won a Calder Cup, right? I mean, he has the bloodlines. He knows how it's done. I love how straight-faced and cold he seems. Like, at the draft was just a thing of beauty. Like, the anger he almost expressed when he made those draft picks was great. But, again, sorry, 3 years, definitely Tim Murray will be GM of the Senators. And we'll see if he can take all of the kids that he's had a hand in drafting and turn them into a successful NHL team. That's the test for him now. Brian's just overseeing it.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Fair point. Good way to end the show, too.
All right, and that's it for the week. Let's get out of this sweat box, Graham. This is disgusting.
Yeah, I feel like I should be like knitting shirts in China or something.
Well, I'm already half constructed a pair of Nike shoes over here, so we can maybe move on.
Good stuff. Listeners, thanks again for listening to another episode of the Sixth Sense Podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. We'll try and catch you again next week.
On to greener pastures.
All right, take care, Tim. See you soon.